Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Look out your window, and what do you see? Out on Library Square this morning, there's sunshine and people walking around without coats, hats, or gloves. Is this really January in Utah? Today on the program, we're talking about the weather, about why there's no snow, the science of weather forecasting, and about the big weather picture of climate change. Joining me this hour is Jim Steinberg. He is professor of atmospheric science at the University of Utah. And Professor, thanks very much for your time today.
Good morning.
Also with us, Larry Dunn, meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service in Salt Lake City. And Larry, thanks to you.
Good morning.
Later on in the program, the role of filmmaking in Utah's cultural landscape. We'll have a conversation with Academy Award-winning producer Geraldine Dreyfus. But first, the weather. What do you make of the lack of snow and the warm temperatures this January? We're having some trouble with the phones this morning, so I won't invite you to call us, but you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Gentlemen, how much skiing are you getting in this year? It's not a great backcountry kind of winter so far. Jim?
Yeah, I think last year I probably had 25 days of skiing in already. This year I'm definitely in the single digits still.
And Larry?
Yeah, outside of the resorts where they make snow, there's really not much skiing in Utah right now.
So no snowfall yet this year. We had a very dry December. I guess the big question on everyone's mind is when? When is this going to change? Do you see any storm activity in the future, the near future? Larry Dunn.
We have quite a bit of skill in the first 5 to 7 days. Beyond that, we do run our models out all the way out 14 days. But you know, looking at how those verify over the years, not so well. What we're seeing right now is we can pretty confidently say not much is going to change through about the 13th to the 15th of January. The second half of the month, we're seeing signs that we could see a change in the pattern. Some of the models show a much stormier pattern. Some of the models show the ridge just staying over us. So the variability there in what the models are telling us is, you know, that's as hopeful as we can get.
My gut tells me that this is very unusual, but I don't have any data to back that up. Is this current dry spell, is it a break from the usual? Larry Dunn?
Well, the December was very dry, especially here in northern Utah. Not quite so much in southern Utah, but northern Utah, Salt Lake City, the driest on record at the Salt Lake City airport, 0.03 inches of liquid is all we got at the airport.
What's the average?
The average is about an inch and a half.
Oh, okay.
And so the previous record was 1976. For any of your listeners who were living here in 1976, that was a December just like this one, and we had 0.08, and we broke that record. So the fall, the October, November, December period hasn't been that unusual. It's certainly drier than average because of December. But December was exceptional, and the first half of January looks like it's going to be just more of the same.
What is January typically like here in Utah?
Cold.
Colder than we've been experiencing, for sure.
Yeah, right. It's not uncommon to have a ridge over the area in January, and when we do, it's warm in the ski areas and sunny, and it's usually inverted and cold down here in the valley. So that's not rare. It's just the dryness going on week after week.
So what's the weather in the region? The weather outlook, I mean, is Utah kind of isolated in this dry spell, or are we seeing states across the region not getting much precipitation or rainfall or snowfall?
Well, it's even worse in the California, Sierra Nevada. They have less snow than we do. They're even further below normal in terms of precipitation. But surprisingly, not the entire West is dry. The southern states, Arizona and New Mexico, got quite a bit of snow in December. The snowpack's above average in Arizona and also in New Mexico. The rest of the West, when you get up close to the Canadian border, things get closer to average. The Western Cascades and Washington are fairly near average, but most of the interior West is drier than average. Mm.
So I guess the big question is, what is going on here? I seem to recall stormy weather well into May and into June last year. Are you feeling like maybe this may be a shift in our seasonal weather pattern, or is this an anomaly and it's just something we have to get through, or is this the new normal? Larry Dunn?
Well, year to year, there's always a lot of variability. you can't say that this is a trend, that Decembers tend to be wet. Last December was extremely, that they tend to be dry. Last December was extremely wet. It was very, very different. So 1 year doesn't make a trend. It's just one of those things that you have to get used to. You know, there's a big spectrum out there, and this is one end of that spectrum.
Jim Steinberg?
Yeah, we have a saying, climate's what you expect and weather's what you get. And the variability we've seen the last couple years is part of what's built into our climate system.
Humans have been watching the skies for millennia. And I guess I'm wondering if we're getting better at forecasting, what are some of the technological tools that we're using now that maybe we haven't seen in the last 10 or 15 years? Jim Steinberg?
Yeah, I think weather forecasts are substantially better today than they were 10 years ago or 20 years ago. I mean, the good example would be the severe downslope windstorm we had in Centerville a couple of weeks ago, which was warned, you know, well in advance. That kind of a forecast wouldn't have been possible, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. But it was
what
able to be
made
this year.
Now?
And what made it possible was, number one, is our computer models now have gotten enough detail in them that they can start to see kind of these downslope windstorms. But also the incredible array of observations we have all around the world from satellites and other things that are properly integrated into these models so that they can produce a good forecast of the large-scale systems that drive the local meteorology here. Yeah. And it's really kind of an end-to-end system that has helped to make weather forecasting possible. The unique thing in Utah is I'd say the weather forecasts produced by our computer models here are not as good as they are in other parts of the country. So we're seeing a lot of advantages here, but in other parts of the country for snowstorms and those sorts of things like they have on the East Coast, the forecasts now have gotten quite, quite good.
Why? What's going on with Utah's?
Well, Utah is an interesting place to forecast the weather because our topography is so complicated. And, there's a mumble of jumble of mountain ranges upstream that kind of chew up all these weather systems. And that's one of the things that makes our job a little bit more difficult here.
Mm-hmm. Larry?
I agree with Jim. It's mostly the computer models that have led to better weather forecasting. Beyond about 6 to 12 hours in the future, we're really basing the forecast on those computer models. In the short term, things like Doppler radar, better satellite imagery, a lot more observations, those all make a difference. But beyond about 6 to 12 hours, it's the models.
We're speaking with Larry Dunn. He's meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service Office here in Salt Lake City. Also with us, Jim Steinberg, professor of atmospheric science at the University of Utah. And we're talking about this strange January weather. If you'd like to join us, don't call us. Give us an email, cityviews@kcpw.org. Utah, of course, is a very dry state. We do rely so much on snowpack for our water later in the year. Where are we in terms of snowpack so far this year? Are we in any danger of some water shortfalls later in the summer and the fall? Larry Dunn?
Well, the water situation in Utah is quite interesting. We have a lot of reservoir capacity, and we have a lot of water in the reservoirs because it was so wet last year, and the runoff lasted all summer. So even at the end of the summer, those reservoirs were unusually full. So if you're an irrigator or a city, a community that relies on water that's stored in reservoirs, even if this year is dry, it's not going to be that big of a problem. On the other hand, if you're in agriculture and you rely on rainfall, if you're a dryland farmer or a rancher, this dry weather could cause quite a few problems. Hmm. The other thing that the lack of precipitation is going to do this year, if it continues through the year, through the rest of this winter, is the fire danger this coming summer. We haven't had a big fire, natural wildfire season here in about 4 or 5 years because we've had these fairly wet winters and we've had these prolonged wet springs, and so by the time things dry out, you know, there isn't much of a fire season. But if we go into this year with a big deficit in natural precip, even though we'll have plenty of water in the reservoirs, we could have a lot of wildfires.
Jim Steinberg, comments on the snowpack?
From my perspective, being a skier, it's a real bummer. But my take would be similar to Larry's, although, you know, we have to remember that Mother Nature can bring the goods pretty fast around here as well, and there could be a big recovery. We just don't know if that's going to happen or not. Certainly starting out the year bad is not a good start for for the snowpack.
Mm-hmm. Well, the ski resorts certainly are wringing their hands about the lack of snow. Have we seen this type of condition before, that just the lack of snowpack, the lack of precipitation, When was the last time that we saw this?
We have. It's been worse than this, actually. If you take a look at the winter of 76-77, that was sort of the all-time drought year in this area. The ski areas didn't even open by Christmas that year. Now, they didn't have as much snowmaking capacity as they do this year, but the natural snowfall was much lower in October, November, and December that year than this year. The natural snowfall in Little Cottonwood Canyon has been, you know, close to 7 feet so far this year. I mean, it's not all still sitting around up there. It's evaporated, sublimated, been packed down. But, you know, if you compare that to 1976-77, when the natural snowfall was around 2 feet, all the way through the end of December. So it's been worse than this. And there have been some other years that are similar. For the October, November, December period, this is about the fifth driest, but not close to the driest.
So if we look at the 1976 year more closely, did they recover some in the spring? What was that weather pattern like? I mean, is there any relationship, any correlation that we can draw, or maybe not?
76-77, they, like I said, the resorts didn't open by Christmas. There was about a 2-foot storm the first week of January that year, and then it really didn't snow again until around the 18th of February. And then it went absolutely crazy. From the 18th of February through March, we got something like 14 feet of snow at Alta in that 5-week period. And then April was dry, and then May was very wet again. And then it was a funny summer. We had a lot of thunderstorm activity. So when you look at the water year for 1976-77, it's not one of the driest water years on record at the Salt Lake City Airport, even though it was a very low snow year in the mountains.
So definitely time to recover from this dry spell that we're in right now.
Yeah, I would expect at some point this winter we're going to get a big storm cycle. We don't know when that's going to start. But like Jim said, once it gets going, you know, we can get quite a bit. I don't know that we'll get caught back up to normal, but things should improve substantially.
Jim, did you have something to add?
Well, the only thing I was going to say is at the end of the year, 76-77 was still almost 300 inches of snow at Alta. So the joke I always like to make is that a bad year in Utah is still better than a good year just about anywhere else. And from a ski standpoint, most Utah locals are not too enthused about how the skiing is, but over the holidays, the couple times I did go up and ride the lifts, the people that were here from out of town seemed pretty happy about the skiing, which shows just how good it is here most of the time, that in a bad year, the visitors here are still fairly happy.
Just us locals, huh? Jim Steinberg, he is professor of atmospheric science at the University of Utah. Also with us, Larry Dunn, meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service here in Salt Lake City. We're talking about the weather here in January. If you have questions or comments, send us an email, cityviews@kcpw.org. We need to take a break, but we'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW, Salt Lake City. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Today on the program, we're all about the weather. We're talking about this strange dry spell that we find ourselves in here in Salt Lake City. With us, Jim Steinberg is professor of atmospheric science at the University of Utah. Also with us, Larry Dunn, meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service in Salt Lake City. Feel free to send your comments or questions by email today, cityviews@kcpw.org. I want to shift to the big picture, and Professor Steinberg, much of your research focuses on mountain precipitation. How is global climate change having an effect on Utah's snowpack?
Well, at least in Utah, one of the advantages we have is altitude, which means our mountains are cold, and we haven't seen a strong signal in terms of climate change in terms of Utah's snowpack. We have lots of ups and downs from year to year. Last year was a big year. This was a low year. But seeing a clear signal in terms of the long-term trend in the snowpack in Utah's high elevation mountains, we haven't really been able to pick up on that. That's not the case everywhere, Places that are warmer, for example, have seen some loss of snowpack. But in Utah, the advantage we have is altitude.
Mm-hmm. What are the implications for global climate change further down the road? Do you see that it will, at some point, altitude's not going to save us? Is it going to have an effect on lakes and reservoirs, the Great Salt Lake, other natural forms here in Utah?
Well, we could talk about snow a little bit to begin with. And much depends on how quickly the climate warms. For Utah, when we look at our mountains, the very high altitudes, like from the base of Alta up, the snowpack up there, the snowfall up there anyway, most of our storms, 99% of the snow of the precipitation that falls at Alta falls as snow now. And even a couple degrees of warming is not going to change that much. They're still going to get quite a bit of snow up there. But when we look at the lower elevations, when we're talking about, say, the base of Park City and those areas, once we get past another degree of warming or so, then we start seeing more and more of the precipitation that falls there falling as rain instead of snow. So we'll see more rain events. So we see a loss of natural snowpack there. And then we also are more susceptible to warming events in the winter as things continue to warm over the next couple of decades.
Mm-hmm. What are the trends in the western region generally?
Well, you know, when we look at lower elevations in the Sierra Nevada and in the Cascades, there have been some declines in snowpack there. But again, at upper elevations, things are a little bit less clear. Part of the challenge with the snow business is getting good data. And in at those elevations that we really think that we're going to see the strongest signal. And in Utah, most of our snowpack data is collected at upper elevations. We'd love to have some long-term records, say, from 6,000, 7,000 feet, but those records just don't exist.
Mm-hmm. Air quality, a continuing worry for many Utahns here in Utah. Do the inversions and the pollution levels that we see here in the Salt Lake Valley and other valleys throughout the state, does that have any effect on precipitation, on snowpack?
Well, that's a good question. There are some parts of the some studies that suggest that all this pollution does have an impact on snowfall. But that's a fairly contentious area of debate in the science community. I think that the pollution we have around here gets swept out very quickly in the approach of a storm, and it probably has a pretty negligible impact on precipitation here in Utah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've also heard of studies that have that look at the dust from pollution that settles on a snowpack.
Right.
What kind of effect does that have?
Dust definitely has a dramatic impact on the timing of snowmelt. And in the spring. So we get dust storms here in Utah, and in fact, we have a paper we've just submitted to a journal on this subject that shows where a lot of this dust comes from. A lot of it comes from the Milford Valley, the Escalante Desert, Milford Desert, or the Sevier Desert, and that gets deposited on our snowpack. And instead of that snow reflecting a lot of sunlight back to space in the spring, it absorbs more of the sunlight. So there's more energy being input in the snowpack. So the snowpack melts more quickly in the spring than it would have without the dust.
Mm-hmm.
And so what that means is that the duration of snow cover is reduced compared to a clean snowpack. And there's some evidence to suggest that the total runoff goes down a little bit as well. And that's related to the fact that plants and trees and other sorts of things are able to uptake water over a longer period of time. But that's based more on modeling data, and we're not as confident in that as we are, just the idea that the snow cover duration goes down.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to weigh in, Larry Dunn, on pollution or the effect that may have on the weather?
I think the weather has more of an effect on pollution than the other way around.
Mm.
So, you know, when we get into these high-pressure ridges, we trap the pollution underneath the inversion. We have an inversion, practically every day. I don't think, you know, the typical person thinks of an inversion only when they can see it, either as that brown cloud out there or as fog when there's enough moisture around. But there's actually an inversion most mornings when we've had clear skies. And so it's, if we have that day after day after day, then the pollution begins to build up.
Mm-hmm. And as you say, the weather helps clear that out.
That's right. And we have a little inversion going on right now. The it's got a couple layers. I looked at, you know, we launch a balloon twice a day, and so we can see the temperature stratification above the valley. And the top of the first layer this morning was at 5,200 feet, so right around the benches, and then the top of the second layer was at 6,800 feet, so even up in the foothills a little bit, you would have, you know, by this afternoon, you'll see a little bit of that brown. But we've got a nice little storm, coming towards us. It's little is the operative word, on Friday night and Saturday, and that should be strong enough to clear this out, and we'll get to start over again and build another inversion with the attendant pollution early next week.
We're speaking with Larry Dunn, meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service in Salt Lake City. Also in studio, Jim Steinberg, a professor of atmospheric science at the University of Utah. And we're taking your questions via email today, cityviews@kcpw.org. When it comes to climate change, Professor Steinberg, we talked about some of the implications for snowpack. Doesn't look dramatic here in Utah because of our elevation, but what about for the Great Salt Lake? Are there any concerns that you see on the horizon when it comes to lake levels or salinity or whatever?
Well, that's kind of a difficult question to answer because we don't really have the models built today to answer that. Most of the climate models that we run today to try to figure out what's going to happen over the next several decades or the next century don't resolve the topography of Utah very well. In fact, they don't resolve it at all. And then also, if we want to talk about what's going to happen with the Great Salt Lake, we need a modeling system that can handle the runoff and everything. And we're just at the early stages of developing those modeling systems right now. I think in general, based on what we know about climate changes and the impact that warming will have when we get out towards in the latter part of the 21st century, that we would probably expect average lake levels to be lower than they've been and salinity to be higher. But that's something we have to say that we still have a lot of work to do to really get our arms around.
Mm-hmm. Climate change, is that kind of top of mind for meteorologists like yourself? Or are you thinking about it, or is it more the day-to-day tracking and see where those trends lead us? Larry Dunn?
I'm always thinking about how good the skiing is or isn't going to be this weekend. Mm-hmm. And not so much climate change.
Okay.
In the long term, you know, the climate change is certainly something we're interested in, but it doesn't have much impact on the day-to-day weather forecasting.
Sure. And Jim?
Yeah, my research spans from weather to climate, so it really just depends on what I'm working on. But I think for most people who are in meteorological research today, we're all thinking about climate change and trying to figure out exactly what's going to be happening over the next several decades. And in particular, trying to bring more specificity into the projections for the future, because what we have now are kind of general projections for the Earth as a whole. And we want to be able to telescope down to the regional scale more. And that's where a lot of energy is going these days.
Mm-hmm. Back to the tools of the trade. It seems like we are so dependent on the satellites that surround planet Earth for our forecasting and for our projections. What happens, what if a satellite goes down? How hampered are meteorologists in their computer modeling and so forth? Jim Steinberg?
Well, over 99% of the data that's ingested into weather prediction models today comes from satellites. So it's really critical that we have that data. Now, one satellite going down might depend on the satellite. We certainly lose. We have certain types of satellites, some that are called operational. They're absolutely critical to weather forecasting. Then we have lots of other satellites that NASA has put up over the years, and we take some of that data and put it into our weather models as well. So not all satellites are equal. I think with respect to GOES, and Larry can correct me if I'm wrong, GOES being these big geostationary satellites that you probably see on the news and that sort of thing, I think we actually have an extra one up there right now that can – and they do this – to make sure we're covered. And if we have a failure, we can move this extra one in. But we certainly are pushing right now. There are a lot of concerns about future satellite launches and where we're going to be going in the future. There's great opportunities there, but whether or not we continue to invest in this as a resource for the country is something that's a matter of debate.
Larry Dunn, the end of the infrastructure, is that the apocalypse? Is that the 2012 that so many people are worried about for the meteorological industry?
Well, I don't think we're too worried about our infrastructure failing in 2012. Like Jim said, there are a lot of different kinds of satellites up there. There are these geostationary satellites. The Weather Service operates one just off the East Coast and one just off the West Coast. Those are parked in a geostationary orbit, meaning that they rotate at the same speed as the Earth, so they're always over the same location continuously, and that's over the equator. One's around 135 west or so. And then there are also polar orbiting satellites. This is more like what the space shuttle used to do. You know, it would orbit over the pole, so it would go over the North Pole and then over the South Pole, and it would cover a different swath of the Earth every time it did a full rotation. We have a satellite. The satellite off the West Coast just was replaced last month by a new satellite. It had been put up there about a year ago. It had been parked. The old one was about 6 years old, and we just replaced that. The old one is still there in standby, so we do have some redundancy.
Well, a safety net is always good. You've both been in the weather business for decades, for a very long time. Does the weather continue to hold interest for you? Or are these tools making it kind of old hat and you can predict things, you know, 10, 14 days out in the future and it's nothing new?
I have to pinch myself almost every day that I get to do this for a living. It's a great field to be in. And the technology is unbelievable. It continues to advance in ways that you can be like, you're like a kid in a candy shop every day is the best way to put it. There's always something new coming down the pike. The birth of the internet and the computer power that we have today allows us to do stuff we couldn't do 10 or 15 years ago. It's a pretty incredible business. It's hard not to be motivated every day.
Larry Dunn?
Yeah, I feel the same. The worst part of the job is when we're under a big ridge like this. When we have a storm coming, all the information that we've got coming in, especially compared to how it was when I started in this business more than 30 years ago, you walk in and you can't believe you're getting paid to do that. You know, on those stormy days, it's really exciting.
But you still can't scare up a storm for us, huh?
Yeah, we have this weather control device in the back of the Weather Service building. It seems to be malfunctioning.
Well, get it up and running already. Larry Dunn, he's meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service in Salt Lake City. Jim Steinberg, professor of atmospheric science at the University of Utah. Gentlemen, thanks very much for your time. And let's pray for snow.
Exactly.
Up next, Why Film Matters, a conversation with award-winning producer Geralyn Dreyfuss. But first, a break. This is City Views on KCPW, Salt Lake City.